My hope is that this book will get into the hands of young girls who will take, I don't know, take it as a, I can too do it.
Good adventures, everybody. I'm Melissa Bonzek, and welcome to episode 123 of Books Cubed, the show where I chat with authors you should be reading. Today, I am welcoming Gigi Lane. We're going to talk about her first book, which I absolutely loved. It is called Little But Fierce. Welcome, Gigi.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for loving my book. I really appreciate it.
I met her in Las Vegas. We were doing a book show together, and she happened to be at the table next to me, thank goodness. And hold up your book so anybody who's watching on YouTube can see it. It is a gorgeous cover, and it is such a fun story. I read this in, it's okay. Yeah. Poor thing. I don't want her to make her hold the book up the whole time because it's kind of thick. I read it. I was on a cruise a couple weeks ago, and I read it in almost one sitting, and I cried at the end. I loved it so much. So tell everybody a little bit. Now, this is your first book, right? Okay, so give everybody a little bit of a elevator pitch of what the book is about.
It's about a young girl. She's 14. She's getting ready to start high school, and she is the lone introvert in a very close family of superstar extroverts. They're all very outgoing and into the performing arts and things like that. Big, huge tradition of beauty pageants in this family. And of course, this is not something that Dash, her name is Dash, is capable of doing. You know, it doesn't matter what she looks like. She's just got a real issue with audiences. And I set that up very early in the book, probably on like by page two or three. So she is very excited at the beginning of the book because she had beat out all the competition at the high school that she's getting ready to attend in a couple of months for the editorship of the freshman section in the yearbook. And she's just pumped because finally she's got something that she's done. She's going to get on a family's wall of fame. It's going to be amazing. And then they restructure the district lines. And she and her best friend, who is also her cousin, lives next door, are going to end up going to Albion High School instead. And she's, well, she can't bear the loss of this editorship. So she fights to keep it. And she chooses, unfortunately for her, a poor way of doing that. She gets onto social media and handles it about as well as a 14-year-old would, or anyone actually. I've seen plenty of adults who are outraged not handle that very well. And then she's kind of waylaid by a newspaper reporter, and that's when she really shoots yourself in the foot. So she ends up going to this new school, friendless. Well, friendless is putting it nicely. She is public enemy number one. And she has offended the wrong people in her class, including the queen bee. So, and she discovers that she has to take a public speaking course as a requirement her first semester, and it just goes from there. And of course, there's a boy, so she's all gaga about a boy. So, but she's trying to keep it on the down low and hide it. She doesn't want anybody to know it because she's extremely short. She's not quite 5 feet, and she probably does look like a sixth grader. You know, she's little and petite and flat-chested and just tiny. So she doesn't have a huge amount of self-confidence and big, beautiful red hair. I mean, I would have loved to have had that hair, but she doesn't love it. You know, I mean, nobody, I don't think anybody ever loves their hair. Have you noticed this? People who have straight, flat hair always want the big curls and what have you. And then girls who have the big curls, they're dying, for that straight, flat hair. So it just doesn't matter what kind of hair you get, you're going to want the other kind every time. So anyway, she has quite a few hurdles to manage. And she decides that the way she's going to get through all of this is she's got this self-help book to try to help her with her social anxiety. And throughout the book, she's trying to apply the exercises, et cetera. And sometimes she has success, but sometimes she doesn't. And so it's all about her trying to grow in more ways than one. And I had a great time writing it. I really did. I had so much fun writing it.
I had a great time reading it.
And
the day after I read it, I kept walking around thinking of things I was going to tell my friends. Wait a minute, those were people in the book. They're not real people.
Good. Excellent. I love that.
Yeah, and I loved her name. I love when there's unusual names for characters. How did you come up with her name as Dash Durham? How did you come up with that?
You're going to love this. Part of the reason that I ended up writing a book about a kid with social anxiety is because I taught public speaking college students for about 17 years. And I have seen the gamut. Now, nobody ever wants to take public speaking. It is just a requirement for most majors to graduate. And probably the very worst student I ever had was the very first time I ever taught a class. It was night. It was before cell phones. I was in Sumter, South Carolina. And this girl was just, she couldn't. And I thought, oh my God, oh my God. She's going to hyperventilate. She's going to pass out. What if she hits her head? What do I do? Is this the thing where you have the paper bag? I think this is the thing where you have the paper bag. Do I have a paper bag? No, I don't have a paper bag. And I'm just kind of looking around. Does anybody else have a paper bag? You know, amazingly, she did not faint. I was really shocked. And she did get an A in the course because by the end of the class, she was just about here. You know, and it was like, okay, you're getting an A. You compared to what you started out, you're definitely getting an A. Bless her heart, you know. So so this is sort of what the impetus to go for that. And it just so happens that at one point, about 6 or 7 years ago, I had a student whose name was Dasha Durham, and she went by Dash Durham. And I was fiddling around with this idea, right? And one of the things that was kind of bothering me is I just wasn't happy with the name of the character. And the minute she said her name, because I just, you know, you read out the name and then it's like Dash. And I was like, that's it. That's the name. And I just looked at her and I said, do I have permission to use your name as the main character in the book I'm writing? And she's like, well, yeah, I guess so. You know, and everybody, of course, is laughing, but I have witnesses. So,
witnesses.
20 people at least in that room. So yeah, and she was a great, great student. I really loved her. She was lots of fun. And I don't remember her like she's my best friend or anything, but she is one of the students that stands out because she had a great sense of humor and was very down to earth and could laugh at herself and that kind of thing. So I'm hoping that this Dash Durham is, although she's not meant to be that Dash Durham, I'm hoping that, that there's a positive flow of energy coming from the girl that I taught so long ago.
Well, all the characters felt very rounded, very real. Like I said, I thought about things to tell my friends and like, they're not real. They're from a book. Can't believe I've never had that happen to me before where after I'd finished reading a book, as readers, we always get really into books and we think about the characters, but I don't think about things I need to tell them like they were real people.
Well, thank you. I have a bachelor's and a master's degree in theater, and I don't regret getting those degrees. As a matter of fact, I met my husband of 33 years when I was in graduate school, so good for me. But anyway, when I was writing the book, and I wrote it during NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month or Writers Month. I can't ever remember.
What year did you do that?
I actually did that in 2017.
Oh, that's pretty good. Okay.
I had just 2 weeks before I had lost my job. And then, my father died. And then 2 days after that, I lost my job. And it was just like, well, I'm going to take this. And I totally didn't even remember that such a thing as NaNoWriMo existed. But I guess they had a bunch of ads out because it was October. And I was like, there it is. I kind of remember this. I remember hearing about this. I thought, I'm going to do it. Because I have an outline and why not? So I did it. And one of the things that I had to do, because I have an incredibly powerful internal critic, her name is Nagette. That's what I call her. And I knew that she was going to sabotage me right from the get-go. So I made a separate document, Word document, in like 14 or 16 point red bold font. And it said something like, "Dear Nagette, I'm well aware that this is garbage that I'm writing right now, but that's the nature of first drafts. And everybody writes garbage. And you're going to have to let me just vomit this garbage out onto the page. And in 30 days, Nagette, you can have at it. You can turn it into gold. Okay." And I also had a calendar that I made in Excel where every day I would write, "Okay, Nagette, only 29 more days to go." And what I did with this piece of this little note to Nagette was I thought, I'm going to have this over to the side. And every time she starts to eat me alive, I'm just going to copy this and I'm going to paste it in there. And I'm just going to keep going. And it was amazing because by the end of like 5 or 6 days, I shut down. That was it. She never bothered me again. And I didn't have to keep crossing off the days on the calendar either.
So. You know that, I mean, that's so important. If you are writing your first book or your 50th book, getting that first draft, and I'm doing that right now. I'm first drafting a new series, first book of a new series. And my writing partner in the afternoons, Amy, always says to me, cause I'll say, I think on Friday or Thursday, I said, today I'm finishing chapter 11. Then I'm going to go back to chapter 3. And she started yelling at me, "No going back." And I said, "Oh, no, no." I said, "Chapter 3 is in a different book. I'm doing a final draft of a different book's chapter." She's like, okay. But yeah, and this is going to be the first time that I'm doing what you did. And I like that yelling at your inner critic. And I have, I think March 7th, I will have 30 chapters finished. As long as I get one done every day, I've done 11. So, and it's bad first drafts. Now, I mean, that's the thing people have to remember is you have to write a bad first draft in order to have something to edit. Now, once you were done with your first draft, how many drafts did it take you then to get to where you wanted to send it to anybody else to read?
I was very lucky in that I found a really great writing partner during NaNoWriMo. Unfortunately, she doesn't write anymore, which is a bummer, but she was always there right from the get-go to be able to share things with. And so one of the things that I noticed that was very unusual about NaNoWriMo is I got to the 50,000 word mark in week three, at the very end of week three, but I wasn't finished yet. So I was like, well, you got to finish this. There was some part of me that felt like if I don't finish this by day 30, maybe I won't finish it ever. I was scared, really was nervous. But one of the things that I noticed while I was writing is that I was getting faster. I mean, as a former actor and director and a little bit of playwriting, I've always been fascinated with the process of whatever creative thing you're doing. And I was kind of standing off to the side going, okay, you're really getting fast. This is good. Not perfect or anything, but I was really, it didn't stink to high heavens like the very early bits did. And so in the end, I ended up writing another 22,400 words in the last week. And that last week's worth of writing, quite a bit of it got to stay. I think the one night that I knew that I thought, I think I can do this. I think I am a writer. Is the scene, and you know what it is. They haven't read it. Is the scene when Rafe discovers her in the closet. And I don't know that I just wrote that in about an hour and a half. And when it was done, I was like, is that scene as good as I think it was?
Yes, it was. Yes,
and
it
I
was.
thought, I'm going to walk away from this for an hour or so, and then I'm going to come back. And I read it again. I was like, I wrote a very fine scene there. I was really excited about it. So I think a lot of that, that theater training, all that scene work, et cetera, is in my subconscious. So it's like, I don't have to think really hard. Is this scene building? Is it reaching a climax? Is it, you know, is it going anywhere? Is it not going anywhere? So anyway, having said all of that, Hannah Otero, who was my writing partner, she was always privy to everything I was reading. As far as how many drafts after that, oh my, at least seven, at least, and probably more, because I mean, there were large scenes, huge portions that were fine. They were really okay. But then there were other parts that was like, not working, or this could be better. The part of the book that got the most work rewriting was the very beginning, because it was taking me too long to get to those howlers, those kids at the newspaper that she met when she finally started high school. Well, finally, at that time, it seemed like it was taking forever to get her into high school. So rewriting the first part was just done. I bet I rewrote the beginning about 30 times. I'm not kidding. To get it shorter and shorter and shorter to get to those kids without sacrificing what you need to see of her in the beginning to understand who she is.
So, I mean, it was really well done that I got to know her. It didn't feel like it was just filler or anything. It told me everything I needed to know about her and all the different situations with her family and her best friend and the pool and the opening scenes. And I want to give pieces away. just everything that led to her eventually starting high school. I think that was good. And yeah, that's a problem sometimes as writers. We look at things and go, wait a minute, can I start sooner? And it's just, am I cutting too much? Am I giving you enough of the person?
Yeah. Yeah. And then there were a couple of scenes between her and her cousin Avery. Oh, they had to go. They had to go. There wasn't room for them. I had to get us into that high school.
Do you still have the scenes?
Well, yeah.
Because you could do those in your newsletter as an extra bonus for joining the newsletter. You get to read the scenes that were cut.
Right. And they are going to be a little difficult to find, because basically my idea of rough draft or saving writing is just every day. Save it as a new thing with that date. So
I do too.
I've got, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of those, and it'll be a trick to find it. But yeah, you know, they talk about kill your darlings. And there was originally a scene with her and him playing a game of their own special game of catch, which is to try to make the other person not be able to catch it, you know, throw it in such a way that the other person loses. And they're fighting over, I guess they're playing for who has to take out the garbage all week long, because they live right next door to each other. And she's explaining to him, because Hannah was saying, because at first I had her going to see a psychiatrist about this. And Hannah's like, no, you can't do that. This kid has to figure it out on her own. You can't have her go to a psychiatrist. And I'm like, well, have you never been to therapy? Because a good therapist doesn't tell you anything. They just ask you questions and force you to find out and come to the answer. But I was like, okay, fine. I won't have her go to a psychiatrist. So I had her doing research, and then eventually I was doing my own research, and I found all these great books online at the library. And I was like, okay, all right, I can see her doing this, because I thought there's no way that she can make some of these discoveries or know how to make them without some kind of guidance from a third party. So So anyway, in the beginning, there was this wonderful scene between her and Avery, where she's explaining to him what she's discovered and how this affects her, et cetera. But, you know, it had to go. And that kind of information had to come after she started high school, because I just had to get her to those Howlers because they're great. And and she needed to get out. You know, it's at the very beginning of the book, you're all in her head. I mean, you're in her head the whole time because it's first person, but she needed to have actual interactions with those kids. And I had a lovely time building those characters. There were a couple of times where that thing happens where they just kind of take on a life of their own. And I think that happened the most with Travis. Some of the things that he ended up doing in the book, I feel like I can't take credit for that, because he just kind of showed up and did it. And I was like, oh, well, okay. And just went with it. So
now when you write your next book, now for me, every time I do it, I do a PDF to a special mailbox for myself every time I finish a writing session. So I label it chapter 7 before I remove such and such scene. And then when I go back and look for things, it's really easy to find, because sometimes I'll remove something and go, wait a minute, I got to put that back and I don't want to have to rewrite it. So I got to go back and look. But it's smart to have backups. And
I promised myself after this last time, because I discovered that, you know, like I said, I've got hundreds of documents, because it was every date that I wrote, which was every day. It seemed like forever. And yeah. I would go and I would take it out. And they're like, no, I'm going to put it back in. Tag it out. Move it around. Move it. It was just a wreck. And later I thought, you know, next time you need to keep better track. You need to name it better, or you need to have an Excel spreadsheet where you can make a little note at the end of every writing session. This is what I did today.
That's a good idea. And also, if you're mailing to yourself, don't do it from the same email account, because when you delete all your sent email, it deletes everything that you've saved.
Oh my.
So yes, I had that happen to me, and I thought, I had to go back, and I think I just lost a bunch of stuff, but it was all stuff I'd already finished. So I had to make myself a new separate Gmail account just to hold. And I have folders for each of the projects I'm working on, and I send from a different email account. And then I've got it also on a portable drive, and I get just, cause I had when I use Scrivener, and it wasn't a problem with Scrivener. Just I was writing on Scrivener on my laptop, and then I wrote on my desktop, and one overwrote the other, and I lost almost everything. And I was able to recover some of the timestamps with Scrivener. Has timestamp things you can go back and get, but I had to rewrite 4 or 5 chapters from scratch because they were written over. And oh yeah, and I was in public when it did it, and thankfully I didn't have too much of a hissy fit. I think I was at the gym waiting for my husband, but I about cried because I'd been, my first book was also a NaNoWriMo. In 2004, I wrote it as a NaNoWriMo, and I finally published it in 2017. So it's a great way to get yourself writing a first draft. And I think it's great that you got 72, 73,000?
72,402 words.
and how long is the book? I thought it was pretty thick. How long was the book? How many words did you finally end up with?
About 81,000, maybe 82, but I think it's right around 82,022.
Wow.
I think that's how many. But the thing is that it, I just, you know, I traded a lot of words, I guess you could say. There are all kinds of scenes that hit the cutting room floor and didn't make it back in any way, shape, or form. Just trying to figure out. One thing that was very helpful to me was I had a notebook, and I found that, and I did this like 7 times, I would draw a calendar in this Moleskine notebook that I have. And I had different colors assigned to different characters and what have you. And I would put all, you know, I would put the main plot points in red. I would put, you know, midpoint and pinch point two, et cetera, in red. And then underneath it, but I did it so that it was the time period of the book, so I could make sure that I was keeping my days straight, that I wasn't doing something on a Sunday that was there's no way that could have been that Sunday, because, you know, and because we were dealing with school days in particular, I needed to have a visual, okay, what's going on here? So I was able to kind of map out the days. And I'm not a pantser, no. But my plot points that I had going into it, there were only the basic 10, you know, the hook and the inciting incident and the key event, etc. What was going to happen between each thing was totally up in the air. Didn't have any idea. I didn't even know how many kids I was going to be dealing with the howlers. I thought, man, how am I going to keep these kids straight? And how many kids are there going to be here? How many can you juggle, you know? And for the audience too, how many can you juggle for them? So I ended up with 7, and I did searches on the internet. I Googled like young Korean male boy, and I would go through until I found a picture of somebody I liked. Sometimes it was somebody famous, sometimes it wasn't. I'll let you know that I loved Glenn so much from The Walking Dead. I never got over the way they killed him. I just never got over it. So I found a picture of Glenn, you know, the actor that plays Glenn, looking really young. And it was like, okay, that's Nico. Yes. You know, just so some of the people are famous, but quite a few of them are not. And the girl who, when I was first looking for a girl to be my vision of physical embodiment, a dash, I typed in something like, you know, petite, red hair, long hair, curly freckles, and did a search for that. And I went through about 2 or 3 pages, and then there she was. Mm-hmm. Perfect. And I was like, oh, there she is. So from that moment on, that was who I was thinking about when I wrote about her. So I did that with all of them. And it was lots of fun, I have to admit. But in the beginning, it was just mainly something to help me keep them all straight, as they kind of, because they hadn't developed yet, because they were just brand new on the page. So
it was a good number of people. I think any more and it would have been too much. It didn't feel like too much. It felt like that a nice group, and I knew who everybody was. I didn't have any problem remembering who characters were. Of course, I read it all pretty much in one sitting, but I don't think anybody, if you took 2 months to read it, I don't think you'd have a problem keeping the characters straight.
I hope not. And I mean, they're not all equally important, and I tried to attach them. I say I tried to do this. Again, this is one of those sort of, I'm kind of conscious of it, but quite a bit of it is just really a blessing from all those years of doing scene work and being in theater, giving them things to hang their hat on, if you will. You know, mm-hmm. It's really easy to keep Nico straight because he's got a thing for Sue, and he's those shades that he never takes off because he's kind of shy. And of course, Travis with the sweets, and you know, just, and you know, some people, I'm sure there are better writers out there who would be like, oh, that's just so stereotypical. Well, whatever floats your boat, whatever helps create that character and make them real to your audience is what matters. So,
and it did, it made them, like I said, it made them all real to me. And I'm when I finished, I was very sad when I finished that there's no more book. So will there be a sequel?
That's what my sister-in-law said. And that made me very happy. Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, before I even finished writing the book, I had thoughts about, you know, what would happen if. Because it was hard letting go of her too, you know. It was really hard walking away from this book and going on to the next project. So I thought, you know, you can always write another one. And wouldn't it be great if, and what if that? And one thing I definitely wanted in the sequel, and we're going to get it in spades, is Baba is this just untapped source of fun and drama and what happened. I'm like, really need to get more of Baba in there.
And Avery needs to come back for more.
I'm hoping. I want to definitely. I don't want to say anything because I will spoil it. But I don't want to spoil this book by talking about, you know. But anyway, yeah, I want to definitely have Avery in there. And there are all kinds of different things I am looking at. I don't know if is it appropriate to mention that or what I'm looking at or possibilities. Or
don't say anything because it could ruin, it could spoil the main story. Now, so when I know the book is coming out on the 20th.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, where is it going to be available?
Amazon, Kobo, and Google Books. I thought I was signing up for Google Play and I didn't find it. So I sent them a panicked email the other day and I'm like, where is it? Where is it? No search is revealing it. And they're like, no, it's on Google Books. And I can't remember what the explanation was, but I guess they're trying to put books on Google Books, or maybe if you're a new author, they don't put you just on the broad Google Play. I don't know, but I'm on Google Books. So if you look at Google Books, you'll find it.
Okay, so I'll put all the links in the show notes, and hold your book up one more time because the cover is really pretty. And it just is exactly how I pictured her, a little bit fierce. And this is Gigi Lane. And like I said, all the links will be in the show notes. And I want to thank you so much for coming on today. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this book. And I'm so happy that we ended up in tables next to each other. Because I may never have found it. And that would be a tragedy.
You may be happy that we were seated next to each other, but I am really happy we were seated next to each other because I had no idea what I was doing. I still don't know what I'm doing. And you were just a font of information. And continue.
She sold tons of books that day. Every time I looked over, you were selling another book.
I don't know if I was selling that many books, but I felt happy with the amount that I did sell, given the audience that usually attends rave. You know, they are more about science fiction, fantasy, and romance. And I thought it was hysterical because they put me at a table with somebody that was selling sapphic erotica. And here I am. Trying to sell, that was on the other side of me. And here I am trying to sell this YA. And I could see people with their kids looking over and, you know, looking at the table banner that I had, but then they'd see what was going on right next to it. And they're like shoving their kids. Come on, come on, come on, come on. You know, right? As fast as ever. So I kind of would like to think maybe I could have sold more. But
yeah, it's too bad we weren't sitting next to each other.
Yes, but you had a whole table and you had so many different things.
I did. I shared a table. I shared a table with a lady. Yes, she had romance. Yeah, I had my roller prompt books and I had my cozy and paranormal cozy with me. And yeah, the paranormal books fly off the table. I sell out of those. And excuse me, the roller prompt writing jump starts. Those sell out like crazy. Yeah, those sell out like crazy. But the cozies, people just don't. I don't think they know what to do in my books.
Yeah, I don't think in that venue they do. When I was first doing my research to see what would be, because I want to write something that is of interest to me, but I also want to write something that will actually sell. And I thought, well, romance is the biggie. But I thought, I'm not that into romance. I mean, I am, but I'm not. And frankly, with the steamy things, I see these people on Book Talk that are just going on and on and on about how they just can't get enough of the smut. And I'm thinking, I don't know, maybe I'm showing my age. I'm just not that interested in that at this point. How many different ways can you describe it? And so are you reading this to get yourself all hot and bothered so you can go jump on your significant other when you're done with this reading session? Is that what this is about? I don't know, but I know I'm not really interested in writing that, but neither am I interested in writing something that's all chaste and pure either. So I thought, what are you interested in? And I thought, cozy mysteries seem to do pretty well. There seems to be a hunger for that. I'm putting mine in the world of theater because that's what I know. And because I think there are enough bake shops and B&Bs and coffee shops and bookstores already out there where these things take place. So I'm thinking maybe this will be sort of a nice little niche. And I am doing a kind of a paranormal twist on it. So we'll see.
If there's one thing you want to come out of this book that you've written, what would it be?
I, of course, want them to enjoy it. You know, I just want them to enjoy it. It's a story just like any other book, right? But I'm really hoping that this book will find its way into the hands of young women who... I didn't realize until my daughter was this age, and she is the impetus behind writing this book, just how maligned freshman girls are. I mean, they are like I started noticing that talk show hosts, if a man is doing something that, you know, a celebrity type person or a politician, they will often accuse them of crying like a little 13-year-old girl or like a little, you know, they look at freshmen or young women like this and they're like, oh, they're so emotional. And it's like, well, yeah, there's a lot of hormones happening there. What about boys? Look at all their hormones. At least the girls aren't busting things and destroying public property and what have you. To me, I'm sitting here going, is this when it starts? Is this when the thing making women feel like they're less than, is this when it starts? Because it sure feels like it. Because up until that point, I never had to really, you know, we were always careful about what we watched with our daughter in terms of female empowerment. Her favorite Disney was Mulan. We had them all, but her favorite was Mulan. And I'm like, yeah, go girl. Good. And then Mulan too. Those were her two favorites. So I was like, this is when it starts. About the time young girls are developing into women, let the beatings begin. And I'm thinking, what with all of the crap out there telling you how your body isn't perfect unless you look like this airbrushed model. I had a student give a speech one day about, and he showed a clip, you can find it on YouTube, where they took a very attractive young lady in a modeling session, took her picture, and then in 90 seconds, they showed all of the airbrushing they did. I always thought it was just, you know, their skin. They lengthened her waist. They lengthened her legs. They made her eyes like 30% bigger. I mean, they just Photoshopped that thing. It was amazing. And she barely looked like herself by the time it was all over. And it was like, no wonder we can't live up to the expectation. It's impossible. Even the most beautiful model person who gets paid to do this isn't good enough. So my hope is that this book will get into the hands of young girls who will take it as a, I can too do it. You know, Dash has this little phrase that she comes up with, I'm a strong and powerful woman who can fill in the blanks. And I'm hoping that this will give them a little comfort, give them something to hold on to. When I was coming up, there was nothing out there for us. And what was out there was really depressing, you know, Catcher in the Rye, Separate Piece, the Bell Jar. Oh, you know, so, and I remember at that time thinking, why isn't there anything funny? Why isn't there anything? Because I miss those books from when I was young, the happy books, the books that had humor in them. And there just wasn't anything out there. And even today, everything is pretty, for YA audiences, there's a lot of bloodlust, a lot of, you know, and that's fine. But I do think there should be something else on the table, just as a just as a choice. So I'm hoping that if there are girls out there that wish that they could feel a little bit better about themselves, or can read this book and see what Dash does to help herself, that they will do that. And that will make me very happy. I mean, I may never even know it happens, but I'm really hoping that it'll happen, whether I know about it or not.
I think it will. You know, people want to read books and see themselves. And of a young girl starting high school, maybe even in high school already, even, or even starting eighth grade, they're gonna read it, and it's the things that happen with her. Some of it's, you know, the media and that kind of thing, and the social media, but still, they're gonna see themselves in her, and because she triumphs, they will feel like they can triumph too. So I think it will reach women. It will reach them.
I'm hoping so. And as I've told other people this, I wrote the book I would have loved to have read when I was this age. Would have killed, you know, for something that had some humor and somebody I could relate to. I mean, I wasn't a little short, skinny person like she was, but doesn't matter. I mean, we all have those insecurities, and especially, you know, the whole thing about, you know, boys. Does he like me? Does he not like me? I can't tell. How do you tell without showing your hand? And if the other person is doing that as well, that can go on for a really long time, you know, where you could just throw up your hands and give up because you're too scared to let them know that you like them. And maybe they are too. So there can be this just unreal, lengthy non-courtship that goes on. And one of the things that she says in the book, I think, you know, I'm thinking, good grief, if I wasn't married and I had to go out there and date again, I would still be in that same spot. How do you tell? How do you know while protecting yourself, you know? So yeah, I like her a lot. There's a lot of me in her, but there's a lot of her that I wish I was like, you know, so.
I want to encourage everybody. This is the book. I've got this beautiful little card here because it was an ebook for me. There's the book. And like I said, everything, all the links will be in the show notes. The book will be out by the time this airs. And thank you so much for coming on. And everybody out there, I will see you next time. I want you all to go read a good book. And you're going to start with this one, Little Bit Fierce.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Books Cube theme is written by Laura Lynn Hardy, performed by Laura Lynn Hardy and Billy Tyke Miller, and is recorded at Mill Kids Recording in Huntsville, Alabama.